This is episode 34 of Advanced D&D, a podcast from WUKY, hosted by Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas. In this episode, we will talk some music, you know, of course, give you a little bit more of our pop culture love and love of food and much more. It's coming up right here on Advanced D&D on WUKY. Well, this is episode 34, and Dan, we always start off with the news, and while I wouldn't necessarily say that we have many topics to cover, that doesn't mean that what we're about to cover is not light, it is light in any way.
That's right. This week we saw verdicts in two very big trials when it comes to social justice and race. First off, Kyle Rittenhouse, the punchably baby-faced killer of those two protesters, and he also injured a third protester, was acquitted of his charges. It looks like his defenses, his self-defense defense seemed to have worked out. We talked about it, I think, in the last episode a little bit about this trial before the verdict had come out. It honestly doesn't surprise me. And the sad thing is, nothing surprises me anymore, sadly, when it comes to our justice system in particular. This judge already seemed to have kind of prejudiced himself from day one before the trial even started. And the more I read about the Rittenhouse case, the more complicated, convoluted, and complex it became. So it kind of doesn't surprise me. The second one, and these two are honestly very much related trials in my mind, was the trial of Travis McMichael, Greg McMichael, and William Roddy Bryant, who killed Ahmaud Arbery. They were actually all found guilty of all of their charges. And it was interesting. I listened to a podcast recently about that case and how the prosecutor basically played down the racial element of that case, and it was more of her debunking and deconstructing the defense that was trying to say that all they were doing were they were considered citizens trying to make a citizen's arrest, and she kind of tore that defense completely apart. What the two have in common to me, besides the fact that they are either adjacently or directly related to race relations in America, is that both the assailants, both the defendants in these two cases, basically went out looking for trouble, like, period. Kyle Rittenhouse armed himself with a gun that he could not have legally, ventured into a town that he did not live in to ostensibly defend a used car lot or a car dealership, ostensibly to, administer medical aid to people, which apparently you need to carry an AR-15 with. And then the three folks in Georgia, they were what exactly? They were defending their home from a black jogger, essentially. So it's interesting. I do not readily come to the conclusion that we've received justice anytime a verdict goes in a favorable way. But yeah, it's been a complicated week. Your thoughts?
Well, on one hand, part of me, wants to immediately go to the quote from Dr. King that the moral arc of the universe is long and bends towards justice. And, keeping that in mind as I am trying not to just completely lose faith in just about everything, it's been really interesting looking at this case and kind of comparing it to these cases and looking at it from the standpoint of, first and foremost, like the justifying these heinous acts that in any other situation would probably most people would consider, one way. But because of racism and white supremacy, these things are upheld. And, I think about how the gentleman who documented the murder of Mike Brown, of Eric Garner, is in jail for obstruction of justice, I believe. you know, and the conversation about these people who went and murdered Ahmaud Arbery had to be dealt with this way. And there was a chance that they could have gotten off. And there's also a chance that this case would have never even been a thing had they not themselves released the video. And then, in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, seeing the conversations about the particular sentences or I guess past, things that the people who were murdered by Kyle Rittenhouse, may have done. Ultimately, that has no relevance in the fact that these people are no longer here. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not, as Stephen Colbert said, like, I'm not a legal scholar, but if it is legal to go and murder someone in this way, maybe the laws should be changed. It's been a heavy week. And I wonder, I think more than anything, how this energy and attention to these issues in this way because of the pandemic is going to continue. There are many other people who had been unjustly killed and been part of this particular movement whose cases are now on, getting ready to start. And so I'm just kind of wondering, like, are we at a point where all of a sudden this is not going to be the big topic anymore? How close to that are we? And at what point are we actually going to really be able to have a justice system that is fair?
Those are some big, big, hard to answer questions. You did touch on the fact that the case for or against Ahmaud Arbery's killers might not have actually happened. Part of that was because the original prosecutor on the case, the former district attorney in Georgia's Brunswick Judicial Circuit, Jackie Johnson, she has just recently been indicted herself for essentially using her influence to protect those three defendants. And apparently an indictment of a prosecutor is very, very rare. So I'm curious to see where that goes as well. But I'm glad to see some level of accountability for people trying to shield, trying to use their influence to kind of to protect these killers. In sort of a semi-adjacently related case that I had all but forgotten about, if you remember a while ago, the Empire actor Jesse Smollett had made an accusation that he was racially profiled and attacked and physically assaulted. And then it turned out there were these two immigrant African brothers who apparently were hired by Jesse Smollett to put this whole thing on. That case is finally going to trial. It seems like that was forever ago. Again, everything feels a little bit social justice and a little bit racially adjacent. That's another very murky, very complicated, like, we could have an entire podcast season, I think, dissecting that story.
Yeah. And, it is something that is a little personal for me because the day that happened, I had to leave work. I was such a wreck about it. I went home and I cried because I couldn't believe that this happened. I mean, yes, I could believe that it could happen, but, it was one thing to just kind of, read about it. And then the more and more that comes out, the story kind of starts to change a little bit. And, I feel like we're in this space where, like, we have to take these victories as best we can, right? We have to, use the powers that be to kind of continue to push for this, justice and for a better world for everyone. And then you have situations like this where the other side will use as a, well, maybe that didn't happen just like that situation. And the hiring the two brothers, I don't even really know. Like, we could go on and on, like you said, about that. But I think that it'll be really interesting to see just how this case turns out, because there are many different ways that it could go, and also the long-term ramifications of cases where actual things like this happen.
Yeah, very, very complicated indeed.
Well, on a lighter note, let's move into music. What you got grooving to this week, Dan?
Not so much music, but it's also good stuff for your ears and a little bit of shameless self-promotion. The day we're recording this, we have released our finale episode of Where Y'all Really From, the podcast that we started this year. It is episode 12. It rounds out a really great season of interviews with Asian Americans, AAPI folks who live in Kentucky. And this episode, I interviewed Lee Kiefer and Garrick Meinhardt, who are a young couple who are both in med school here at UK. And they also happen to be both ranked number two in the world in fencing. They both came back from Tokyo, Lee with a gold medal and Garrick with a bronze. They've both been world champions multiple times. Multiple times been to the Olympics representing the USA. So, and just two sweetheart kids, a really great, fun episode. You can check that out at whereyallreallyfrom.org. And I'm super psyched to start thinking about season two.
Well, I know I don't want to put the cart before the horse. We're going to talk about Hawkeye later, but I would love to hear what their thoughts were on that, that fight in that episode.
We do actually have thoughts on that.
All right. The 29th, the 27th of November is a little bit of a holiday for me. It is the birthday of Jimi Hendrix, who is one of my favorite musicians. And, every year I take time to just kind of think about just the fact that, you know, this guy was only on Earth for 27 years and changed music forever. And I'm internally grateful for him and his musical legacy. And so this time of year, in addition to turkey, I'm always thinking about Hendrix. And one rediscovery I had this week in terms of music was just the live album of Donny Hathaway. There's live and in performance. Both of them are excellent, especially if you are traveling long distances, because they carry the whole way, and it's just a wonderful experience. And so that's me for music this week. And moving into this week in Anderson .Paak, well, you know, the Silk Sonic album dropped a few weeks ago, and it has created a whole bunch of buzz. Silk Sonic won the best video at the AMAs for Leave the Door Open and also performed at the Soul Train Music Awards, like in full garb. Definitely like going to the time they performed Fly As Me and Smoking Out the Window. Both were really great performances. And again, whenever it is safe to go out and see live music again, I hope that they tour. And also, finally, Anderson .Paak debuted a brand new hoodie that he has that just has a screen printed picture of Bruno Mars as a child dressed up as Elvis. And if you don't know, he under his real name, Peter Hernandez, he used to perform as Elvis, and it was actually in the movie Honeymoon to Vegas, performing as a young Elvis Presley. So, there's that. And that's been this week in Anderson .Paak. Moving on to TV and movies, Dan, go ahead and take it away.
Just started catching up on season three. I don't even know. The newest season of Sex Education, show on Netflix, takes place in Britain. Looks like a fairly rural high school, but it's ridiculously diverse, and all the students are really snazzy dressers. And it does such an amazing job of tackling sexuality, gender identity, sex, relationships, in a really funny, genuine, and honestly just super educational way, without hitting you over the head with the education part of it. Terrific cast of mostly young people and a standout, and might I add, gorgeous Gillian Anderson. Just a great show all around. I wanted to touch on an interesting thing that I thought about recently. Simu Liu just performed on SNL, and there was a whole skit that he did with Bo and Yang, where they were joking about the whole like, oh, first Asian, you know, to host this, first Asian to do this, first Asian Canadian. They kind of took it, you know, to a whole nother level of kind of joking about it. But one of the plaques on Bo and Yang's wall was first full Asian to be in the SNL cast, which reminded us that there have been at least a couple of Asian Americans who have been on SNL before. Rob Schneider, who is half Filipino, and Fred Armisen, who actually, I'm looking this up right now, forget entirely what his was his ethnic background is, but let's see. I got this. We're literally live Googling as we speak. Yes, he is a quarter Korean. Yeah, so his dad was half Korean. So the interesting thing is, do those folks not count as Asian because they're not fully Asian? Or do they not count as Asian because they didn't really identify as such? That was not a part of their identity. And there are lots of mixed race folks like that, that you can put in that category, including and up until recently, somebody like Keanu Reeves, who very much passed white, took on mostly white roles. And the times where he did take on Asian roles, it was in things like Little Buddha, which was questionable at best. So I want to kind of talk about this with you in terms of racial identity, because I don't feel like, so in America, if you're part Asian, you kind of can go into either world of your choosing. If you're an African American, it doesn't matter what percentage of Black you are, you're Black. And so I couldn't see the idea of a very light-skinned African-American being on SNL and not being acknowledged as a Black cast member, right? Give me your thoughts on that.
Wow. I'm so glad that you brought this up because I think this is a very important conversation. One thing that frustrates me more than anything is when anybody who is specifically to Black people, when anyone who is not Black tries to question another person's Blackness, that is not for you to decide. And, you know, I growing up was made fun of by white kids in my school and Black kids in my school. Didn't really kind of find myself until I fell in love with Jimi Hendrix and Funkadelic. And kind of saw it from a standpoint of like, oh, no, this is the reactions that these people are having has more to say about themselves than it does about anything that you have done. So I kind of take it. It's a serious topic for me whenever this comes up, because I truly believe that, you know, we are free to identify at, you know, the way in which we want. And there are certain privileges that come with, you know, being dark skinned, being light skinned, being more of a moderate complexion. You know, like the thing is like race is a social construct. There is no biological, you know, thing for it to be. But I think that when we get into talking about like mixed race and things like that, that whole conversation is interesting because I feel like, well, in America anyways, like nobody is pure anything. And especially for Black folks, you usually don't have to travel back far enough before you find somebody that doesn't look like you in your family. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, because I think that this conversation comes up a lot, like with Rashida Jones, like even though people just apparently just forget that her dad is one of the greatest music producers of all time, Quincy Jones, you know, there are a lot of people that, you know, that may be of a lighter complexion that maybe like white people don't realize, but that doesn't take away from their experiences, and it doesn't mean that they don't experience things in a different way, you know, don't experience racism in a different way. So kind of in a roundabout a conclusion to your answer, like I think from my experience, I've kind of seen the way that this shows up within like the Black community. I've seen the way that it's shown up with my interactions with other white people. And I really don't think that it is a healthy road to go down to say, oh, well, this person is a quarter this or a quarter that. It's like, well, if you're going to identify as it, like, you know, allow those people to, you know, be who they are.
Yeah, it's it's a muddle. It makes me really, really interested to see this new movie that came out this year called Passing, directed by Rebecca Hall, who herself has very much been just known as a white British actress. Her father is black biracial, which makes her a quarter African and not American, but I guess Brit. So this story was very personal to her, and it looks like it's a period piece starring Ruth Negga and Tessa Thompson. And it looks very, very interesting. And I'm curious to see it and read more about it, because as you said, race is such a construct, and it makes it so complicated and so many kind of different little squirrely ways that we can approach it. In other TV and movie news, these the next two things I want to talk about is a show and a movie that I have not seen yet, but are somewhat related. King Richard, which is the story of Venus and Serena Williams, but focuses on their father, Richard, played by Will Smith, in a very Oscar-baity kind of role. And then Colin in Black and White, a series that is streaming, that is either directed or produced by, I'm blanking on her name, who did 13th.
Ava DuVernay.
Thank you. And it's basically about Colin Kaepernick's sort of childhood, but also interspersed with these sort of talking head and some graphics and Colin himself talking to the screen. So two sports-related, sports-adjacent stories about African-Americans, two biopics in one way or another. Your take on either of these? Have you seen either of these? How do you feel about biopics?
Well, I have to just go ahead and just, throw myself under the bus here. I love a good biopic. As a matter of fact, this morning, I when I was getting things ready to go for work, this video popped up in my feed on YouTube. Was a video of Jamie Foxx and Ray Charles jamming together, as he was preparing for Ray. But I love biopics. I really enjoy time pieces, periodic pieces. Sometimes I am definitely the targeted demographic for things. I have not seen King Richard or Colin in Black and White, but they are both on my list of things to watch. And I'm also curious to watch Colin Black and White specifically because of kind of going back to our earlier conversation, when Colin Kaepernick started protesting, against racial injustice, there were a lot of people that were saying, oh, well, he was raised by white people, so, and he's only half black, and da 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 da. So, I'm really curious to see that story kind of told. Honestly, anything from Ava DuVernay is going to be a pretty fire. And then there's been a lot of Twitter discourse around King Richard. But one thing I do want to make clear is that Venus and Serena are executive producers on the movie, and had final say over, the way that things were portrayed in the film. So it doesn't hold back any punches from what I have seen. But again, I have not I've read about the movie, but I have not seen the film myself. Well, on my end, I have to say I wrote in my notes here Lion King 2, but I definitely did not mean Lion King 2. Started on the Tiger King season 2, which not now that we're not stuck at home and we can go outside and have a conversation with another person. it doesn't necessarily feel like the same spectacle, but the story is continuing, and it's been interesting, and we could talk about it at a later point, but I just wanted to point out that it is out and it is a thing, and there is a very quick cameo from Lexington's own Dia Davidson in the third episode of the series. Also, as I was going around watching things, the Wonder Years reboot, again, I'm a sucker for a period piece, and I will also go ahead and say that when I heard about the series being rebooted, especially with the black family, my eyes kind of rolled and I was like, could we just have our own thing? Does it have to be the Wonder Years? And the answer is Por qué no los dos? Why not both? This very much, you know, sure, it is called The Wonder Years, but it is its own story. Fred Savage produces it. The acting in it is incredible. And I have to give a shout out to Dulé Hill, because it feels to me like he is the black, cool dad musician in the 60s, and it seems like it was a role that he was born to play. It's absolutely excellent, and of course, it's narrated by Don Cheadle, and he just does a great job of keeping things timely and, you know, connecting the dots. Also, over the holiday, I watched Finch, the new Tom Hanks film that is on Apple TV. All I'm going to say about it is Tom Hanks can act with no other human being and still find a way to make you cry every single time. That man is a national treasure. So now moving on from that, let's go ahead and talk about Hawkeye. The first two episodes dropped last Wednesday, and you know, the episode will air the day that this particular episode of our podcast drops. So we are only talking about the first two episodes. Dan, what were your thoughts?
And as always, spoiler warning, because we'll go all the way into the episodes. I will say this: Marvel has done a really great job of making me enjoy things I didn't think I would care about. When I first heard they were going to make a TV series about Scarlet Witch and Vision, I was like, why? And that turned out to be a phenomenal show. Hawkeye, my probably least favorite Avenger, to be perfectly honest. But this series takes a really fun direction. It works off of the Matt Fraction run of Hawkeye, where we are introduced to Kate Bishop, who is a young, feisty protege of Clint Barton's Hawkeye. She ends up taking on the mantle of Hawkeye. It's such a fun, light sort of story, but there's some capery elements. There's definitely a little bit of Scooby-Doo Ramona Quimby action, because Kate Bishop is a very nosy, unafraid, just sassy young woman. One of the best casting decisions, I think I will say probably one of the top three or five casting decisions in all of the MCU was Hailee Steinfeld as Kate Bishop. I've loved her since she played Maddie Ross in the Coen Brothers remake of True Grit. Just fantastic. As boring as I have thought Clint Barton and Jeremy Renner's sort of portrayal of him in the Avengers movies has been, they actually had really, really good chemistry. And I think it's hard to have bad chemistry with Hailee Steinfeld. She just has such great looks and great dialogue, and just such a fun show. And I'm really looking forward to the rest of it.
You know, one thing I really appreciate about the Marvel properties in general is once they kind of find an aesthetic that they want to go for, they like pull it right off the comic book page. I mean, it really feels like, if you have not seen the artwork of Matt Fraction's run of Hawkeye, I highly recommend you look at it, because it's absolutely gorgeous, and it doesn't necessarily meet what it probably isn't what you would expect. There are a lot of purples and blues, and you can see a lot of those translated onto the screen. Also, I did hear that Matt Fraction was going to make a cameo in this series, but due to the pandemic, he could not travel. So he's not in it, but his work is very much a big piece of this. And I just want to say a couple of things. First of all, Joe Russo's daughter is a really talented actress, and I think that she's nailing the like starting to get older part of and trying to wrangle like what it is like my dad's a superhero, but I still have to keep and take care of my brothers and things like that. I really think that she's doing a really, really great job. But yeah, Hailee Steinfeld, like when she was in Enter the Spider-Verse, I was really hoping that she was going to be live action Spider-Gwen, because she embodied that role so well. But as you said, like, I definitely feel like this is like up there with Chris Evans as Captain America for me in terms of just like great casting. And their rapport is great. I love that we already kind of get to, you know, have some experiences with Lucky the Pizza Dog. And also, in terms of representation, like Echo from the Daredevil comics is going to be heavily in this show, also portrayed by a deaf actress, and will be the second time we've had one of those. We have had a deaf person in a Marvel product, and so it is really great to see that kind of representation happening, because it could have been very easy for them to just pick an actor who was not deaf, but they were very intentional with that, and I think that it shows, you know, we're heading in a good direction. But in terms of the series itself, like, I'm excited. I really loved the first two episodes. They were a whole lot of fun, and the LARPing portion of that second episode, by far the most entertaining Marvel I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that slow motion sequence of Clinton Barton dressed up in cardboard armor, battling, and I put battling in quotes, his way through a gauntlet of LARPers was just so hilarious. And honestly, props to Jeremy Renner. I think under the hands of like a more interesting director and given more to do with his character, I think he really stepped up and did a lot with his face in this role. You talked about the artwork in the Hawkeye series. That's all props to David Aja, or Aja. Terrific artwork, and you're right, they definitely brought some of that aesthetic in this. Another thing I'll say about Hailee Steinfeld's performance of Kate Bishop, and I will say definitely the writing of her character, she's a very New York character. She embodies that sort of casual New York rich kid vibe. I love how much game she has. She can pick locks, she can fast talk her way out of situations. She's just utterly undaunted and creative and just kind of relentless, but in an acute and kind of underhanded way. So really, really enjoyed the show. In the second episode, the character that already on IMDb is listed as Swordsman, so there's no real spoiler there, her mom's fiance, a guy named Jack. Kate Bishop and Jack have a little sword fighting scene, little fencing scene in there. And of course, so I had to tie this back into the real life fencers that I know here in Lexington. So I sent them a message about it. I said, you need to watch the show and let me know what you think of the scene. And Garrick said he kind of fast forwarded and watched just that scene from episode two and thought it was pretty good, not super accurate. But he was like, well, maybe it's not accurate because that guy, Jack, he's definitely holding something back, because he seems kind of villainous. And it was funny because they did not know anything about any MCU characters. So it was kind of fun to get that take from them as well. So this is already up there as something I'm anticipating every week. I'm kind of already pre-bummed that it's only six episodes and it's listed as a mini series. So I don't know if there's going to be life in this particular series after these six episodes, but I'm super excited to see Kate Bishop integrated into the larger MCU. And I think if they use this as an opportunity to bow Clint Barton out, I think it'll be a really great way to go.
Yeah, for sure. I loved also, like, I just love the way that, you know, it definitely feels that way. And, you know, as much as I am not like the most like, haha, I got to watch a Christmas thing, the trying to get home for Christmas thing definitely feels like it'll be that way. And I really appreciate the way that they have been using these series to introduce us to new characters that will show up in the movies. And I think it's a much better way than trying to spend 30 minutes of a movie, explaining someone. And you can kind of jump right into it.
Yeah, I'll say this much for the music, too. I, as somebody who just loathes Christmas music, I really enjoyed how they worked Christmas music into the score, to where I think it was what's the song with the bells? Anyway, they worked that song into kind of a suspenseful, you know, thriller motif, which was really nice.
Also, I guess I just want to go back to this just for a minute because I want to know your thoughts. How did you feel about Rogers the musical?
Oh man. Yeah, it was entertaining. I thought the casting was interesting. I liked how they questioned. It was like, wait, Ant-Man wasn't in the Battle of New York. And Ant-Man was played by an Asian dude. What it made me think of more than the musical itself was, how traumatizing it must be to be in New York at all for somebody like Hawkeye, who has lost, you know, people close to him, who has gone through these traumatic sort of like, you know, events. I love the detail that he's wearing a hearing aid. And when questioned as to why you're wearing a hearing aid, they just do a quick supercut of just things exploding all around him. And like literally all of the Avengers should be deaf right now. But it made me really think about sort of the humanity of these characters, of like how much therapy is Clint Barton not getting that he should be getting right now to deal with all of this trauma, all of this PTSD, you know, that all of these characters probably face. And I really like that they kind of touched on it a little bit.
Yeah, it's an important thing. Well, moving into games and hobbies, what's going on in your world?
Thanks to your partner, last night I did yoga for the very first time in my entire life. I don't know what I thought yoga was. I think I was so far, whatever the opposite of adjacent is, was my relationship to yoga. I had no real conception of what it was, except that it was not for me. And then having done it for the first time, I realized, oh, it's just organized stretching and intentional breathing, which is something that we really don't do day to day. So I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to continuing to do it. The other thing that we have been doing as a family is crossword puzzles. My wife, Lauren, has been printing out New York Times crossword puzzles every day. She prints out the regular daily one, and then a couple of other ones, one called the Universal and one called the Daily Commuter, both of which are about Monday level. Mondays, I can breeze through the New York Times. Tuesday, I can trudge through. Wednesday, I can struggle through with a little bit of help, and have not cracked Thursday just yet. But we've gotten to the point where we went to the bargain bin of our local bookstore and bought some New York Times crossword books and brought them on vacation with us. So that is our new obsession. And it's a great way to get off our phones.
Yeah, I mean, anything to get, because I think that you could do the crossword puzzle on the phone, and that defeats the purpose, I think.
Yeah.
It is the holiday season. You know, we just came out of one with all kind of food, and I feel like, you know, personally, I'm not going to be able to go home for Christmas this year. So I'm still kind of trying to wrap my brain around, like, what are the things that I'm going to try to, like, appreciate, and the answer is anything anyone gives me. So that's my like food for this week. But what about you?
Realizing the holidays, and it's funny, we talk about like holiday eating, it's really just two big meals, but they kind of, you know, between Thanksgiving meal and the Christmas meal, they both feel like they're week-long meals, and with leftovers they often are. And traditional American Thanksgiving and Christmases, especially here in the South, is basically meat and three, or in this case, meat and seven, and lots of carbs, just carbs of every kind, slathered in butter, huge chunks of meat. And it is not the way I eat day to day, and my body is not happy about it. I mean, we're happy about it in the moment. I have to remind myself to not go back for seconds, and I have to put in the practice of eating very intentionally and very vegetarian heavy in the times between to sort of mitigate the health effects of holiday eating.
That is a really that is a good question, because I feel like that's part of my struggle as well, as like in between the holidays, like you don't want to go to the grocery store and get a bunch of things, but also what do you eat? So that's something to keep in mind. Well, moving into pandemic advice, you know, I have something that I'd like to share, because I've been thinking about this a lot. And I had a conversation with my mom the other day that really has kind of cemented some of my feelings about where we are now. And especially with this new variant that is out that potentially could be resistant to the vaccines and putting us in a situation where we might be back to square one. I don't know when I'm going to see my mom again. And it makes me really sad to think about. And I'm also finding myself kind of becoming a little bit of a curmudgeon in terms of this particular holiday when I even kind of think about it. So, you know, on the mental health side of things, my advice for this week is like, it is okay to scream into the void. If you have a social media account you want to just go and just scream into, you know, go ahead. That is okay. Just make sure it's not the only thing that you are doing for yourself. The times like these right now are incredibly difficult, and it might be hard to find joy, but please, for yourself, wherever you can find it, hold on to it and appreciate it and do something for yourself. Because if you're just screaming into the void, that does no good for anyone. But if you are screaming into the void and taking care of yourself by, like, maybe having some snacks you like or doing an activity that you like, word. Just make sure you're taking care of yourself, because these times are very difficult.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of alternatives in the same vein as screaming into the void. Chopping firewood is very, very satisfying. Splitting wood, it's actually productive, and it gets out some of your aggression, gets out some of your energy, gets you sweating a little bit. If you don't have firewood to chop, you can go to an axe throwing place like we have here in Lexington and get some of your aggressions out with a new hobby. And just recently opened in Lexington is, I don't remember the name of it, but it's a smash up place where you literally pay money to go into a room, put on some safety goggles, and smash a bunch of shit. And it sounds really, really, really fun. And I might have to go check that out. Scream into the void, smash some stuff.
Bruce Banner would be proud.
And I will say one more thing about this new variant that's potentially coming our way. Omicron. I believe that was my least favorite Transformer from the 80s.
Well, Black Twitter is already calling it Omarion, so I think that's what I'm going to go with from now on.
Wow, like it.
Well, with that, it brings us to a close. This has been episode 34 of Advanced D&D, a podcast from WUKY, hosted by Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas. Please take care of yourself, and we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.